With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Hello, and welcome back to the Keith Cheggers podcast. My name is Carl Donnelly. I'm joined by
Hannah Norris.
And there's a reason that this week, week 36 of Hannah's pregnancy, I am doing the introduction.
Doing the talking.
Normally Hannah does an introduction. Yeah. She normally says something about her body. And this week...
Here at week 36 in my pregnancy.
This week is a birth partner special, hence me taking the lead. And to do so, we thought we'd get a guest on who has actually been previously mentioned on an episode by his wife, Monique Howie. He was described by Monique as the best birth partner you could
ever.
Best birth partner you could imagine. They've had five children, so I thought maybe it's because he's had loads of practice, but yeah. Apparently it's from the word go.
Yeah, and it's not just Monique who says it. Well, maybe. Josh sent through, he did a series on Radio 4 a few years ago called Losing It, which is about birth and being a dad and things like that. And the episode I listened to is going in and for the first birth, and the midwife says to him that he's the best birth partner she's ever seen.
Yeah, well, that is verbatim. So that totally happened. And the reason in terms of mixing those two questions together, what it was, I was so paranoid that I wanted to do everything right. And it's sort of there seems to be this stereotype that men are rubbish, and even if you see it on documentaries like One Born Every Minute, and you'd see a guy sitting there on his phone. That wasn't my reality in any way. It was like, and all the guys I knew were also all fully committed to getting it stuck in. Obviously, we can't do the heavy lifting in terms of the pregnancy and but the one thing we can be there is, like, there's no excuse to not be fully on board, 100% committed and doing everything that you can do. And my brother-in-law, who's like a big old ex-brother-in-law, who's a big old hippie guru guy, was like, when he came to his children's birth, he sort of had a mental breakdown. He made it all about him. And it's like panic, all that stuff. And even like things like Peep Show, the character goes off and plays video games and whatever. But that's just not real. Just like all these stupid adverts of men not being able to change nappies and being rubbish. It's just that's not reality. Certainly not my reality.
Yeah.
And being a good birth partner isn't rocket science any way. You know, there are certain things that I have learned and certain things that you get right and stuff, but it's just like, what it's about is being fully committed to being the best possible support you can be.
Yes. I suppose, yeah, because I think part of the problem that maybe puts off, especially some men, I would say, is that almost feeling like you don't want to intrude, because there's medical professionals. Like, we watched them. What was that show? The BBC show we tried. It wasn't BBC. It's
the Life and
There's basically a new show about
birth. Life and birth, I think.
And basically, it shows quite. We didn't really enjoy it because it's very. It's the sort of birth we don't really want. You know, Hannah doesn't want to go through the style of birth that they show, which is very. Very much
kind of on her back.
On her back in a maternity ward, you know.
Bright lights.
A lot of, it's just, I don't know. But basically, there was one couple on it, and her partner, this was just this gormless guy who you didn't say a word the whole time. And she also had her sister and her mum there as well, and they were doing the talking, and her sister was filming it. And it was just like, but this guy was just sitting there like just a spare wheel in the corner. And you could see that he was just... He felt so out of his depth, and like he didn't know what to say or do. And I feel like a lot of guys probably fall into that category.
I'm sure that that's True, but I imagine if they are listening to this podcast, then they are actively engaged.
Yeah.
And I just feel like that's, there are just, it's not that it's, you know, there are just lots of people who are rubbish. Whether in whatever, you know, it's not necessarily a man, woman thing or whatever. There are people who want to get involved and do it and do the best. And there are people who are just, will take an easy option and whatever. And there's, but for me, like as a man in the child, as part of the equation in the childbirth part of it, yeah, you can't do that stuff, but you have a role to play.
Yeah.
And you can make it a much better experience for your partner. And I always saw it as something that you go through together. It's part of it. And I want to be a part of it as much as possible, just like I want to be a part of and am a part of my children's childcare. And that's not because I'm some hippy dippy, you know, like feminist, whatever. It's purely for selfish reasons. Having children is, having babies is one of the most amazing experiences in the world. And I want to soak up every part of that.
Yeah.
It's not about equality and all of that. It's just, I want in on it. It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's a gift.
Did you feel like that in the, during the pregnancies as well? Even in the first one, did you feel, cause, you know, even like, I think, cause we've done this and, you know, I've been to all the scans where possible. Like at the minute, obviously, with lockdown, I've not been able to. But like, I've felt very part of it the whole time. Yeah. But I know, obviously, I've spoken to some guys who haven't felt really part of their partner's pregnancy. I feel like they feel like it's just that's happening there, and we just got to wait to do our bit once the baby's out.
Yeah, like, which I think is bullshit.
Yeah,
I think that's gonna, that unfortunately, if they don't do it now, then that starts slipping through the rest of the child care and all that sort of stuff. Oh, nappies aren't really, oh, I'm not 100%. No one is taught how to do this stuff.
Yeah, no one no one wants to touch shit, let's be honest.
Yeah, yeah. And no one's taught the birth, and you know, you can read a few books and you can do the NCT and at least know what's going on. But you're either the person who's going to, kind of person who wants to engage with it, with the process of having a child, or you're not. And you're always going to take a step back. And that is true. Both my parents were rubbish and wanted nothing to do with childcare and thus raised by nannies and stuff. So I guess partly, yes, I'm reacting against that by wanting to get involved. But it just seems amazing to me that you wouldn't want to be literally right in there. Gross, weird stuff, but like, you surely, if you read some stuff, you know that these things are going to happen. That's part of it. You're going to get down.
I guess in a way it is now a privilege as well for partners to be part of this, because for so long you're kind of outside the room. Or I think even, you know, when I was born, I was a cesarean birth, but I know my dad was at the hospital, but I don't know how much he was in the room or anything like that. So that's a new opportunity. Yeah. So to kind of miss out on it is a bit of a waste, isn't
I've
it?
Never asked, but I'm willing to bet everything I own that my dad was nowhere near the hospital when I was born.
He wasn't in the country, mate.
I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah, I don't know. He was probably in a betting shop. That's where I reckon he was during my birth. But yeah, I suppose it is just like, it's a different type of, yeah, there are people that want to, I'm interested in it as much as I am invested in it. You know what I mean? I genuinely have found it so fascinating. And it might, again, even like the fact we did IVF. And so even this, I found the science of that very interesting. And like from day one, the moment there was a baby in there, I found reading and learning about it and feeling part of it really, it's just interesting. It's like I've learned so much in 8 months.
Yeah, because we saw pictures of the embryos.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it.
Like just seeing it there, that's a cell, and that might, there's two of them that they put in, and that one or both might become a baby. Is like, whoa.
Yeah.
There it is.
Yeah. That's the picture of our child I'm going to be keeping in my wallet, just the embryo.
I mean, I wonder how much of that is to do with being a comic, not looking for material, but just there's a certain attitude of like, I want to go through different experiences, or I want to have this experience as fully as I could possibly have it.
Yeah,
not just a comic, but as any kind of creative person or whatever. I'm not saying that our actions are limited to that and people can't do that if they're not in those creative fields. But certainly there's something about getting fully engaged, which is appropriate terminology.
Yeah. And I suppose also there is that slight luxury of having more time together when, you know, when you're self-employed and work from home. And you know, we do get to spend more time than normal, especially at the minute we have. So I think there's that thing of, I suppose we get to see it much more constantly growing and happening. And
absolutely. But I just feel as men, this whole thing of men being rubbish, there is not some biological thing that men are incapable of it at some genetic level. That is just absolutely bollocks.
You're saying it's 100% choice.
It is anything. It's a cultural thing.
Yeah, no, it is. Yeah,
it's a personal characteristic to the individual whether they're the kind of person who wants to get hands on, or they're going to use like society, this sort of stereotype of men being a bit rubbish, to sit back on their phone and not engage with it. And that's more telling as to who they are, not who we are as men or as our gender roles. Or whatever.
Yeah. I read something the other day. It was about, I think it was like only 5% of mammals are actually involved in the childcare, like the male, the males, like not of the species, but that humans are one of those 5%. So it's quite common in mammals that there's no active part of being involved with the childcare, but for humans it is, and so we should be doing it.
Yeah.
So there's no excuse, and it isn't that. And like I said, it's not that hard. And it's sort of, I guess the thing is, it seems weird to me because I am not very good at empathy, I can't understand the mindset of someone who wouldn't want to.
Yes.
So it seems totally normal when this woman, and I'll tell you the story of what happened, but when she said to me, when the midwife talked to me at the end of it, when she was talking about, like, it seemed amazing to me. Like, what I did didn't seem anything outside of the norm.
Well, that's what it was
for her to comment on it. But what happened was, and I'm going to talk about, I'm assuming part of this is to sort of talk through the actual birth, everything. But at the end of it, the midwife, who Rose, who'd been, you know, she came up to me as we were sort of all happy and going, she said, I've been doing this. I can't do an Irish accent. I've been doing this 30 years. In the 30 years I've been doing it, and I have never seen as good a birth partner as you.
Wow.
I've been doing this 30 years.
Wow.
And I have never seen as good a birth partner as you. And what was so funny was, Monique was like right there, just had a natural birth, 9-hour labor. Monique was just like, hello? Like, what about? And Rose was like all up of me. She was like, oh man, she was just going on and on about it. And so it did seem weird. The stuff that I did didn't seem that amazing, but it obviously was enough for her to comment about it.
Yes. Yeah, obviously it is the fact that you did what you did was, you were very conscientious and all that stuff. But there's also that it does sound from that response that there is an element that the bar has been set relatively low.
Yeah, so I guess so. I mean, we were prepared. The NCT stuff obviously teaches you a certain amount. They gave a really good tip. I've written down a bunch of tips and stuff that I remember. But
great.
Straws is a great. I don't know if you've heard the straw thing.
Yeah,
taking straws.
Got straws.
As you were saying, Hannah, you don't want to be on your back, which you don't. So having a straw is going to allow you to drink water on your knees or in all the different positions and stuff.
Yeah.
So I constantly had a cup of water available with a straw to sort of in between in pit stops to sort of give. That was one of the things I had. Massage oil. That was good. So I take a night, buy a nice massage oil, and then because I guess what I was quite good at was massaging the lower back. Like Monique wasn't on her back either. So she was on her knees, I think, or leaning over the bed a lot of it. And I think just me being able to push that, you know, that I'm sure they, well, in the NCT thing, I don't know if they had that dole of the pelvic thing, and they showed you that if the pelvis is like relaxed and open, like there's a way of, like when you push down on the lower, the coccyx, it sort of opens it up. Basically.
Oh, yeah, so
If you're basically massaging and pushing down, then it sort of pushes the pelvis.
So
that was a big, I was just doing that all the time. I had the music going on. It was like a real production. I had, you know, so that we had, I was going to say the practical advice was, I was very stressed about my, in all the, about my iPod, about like, if we, cause we, you know, you get moved from place to place sometimes.
Yeah, so I was
very stressed about like leaving the iPod behind.
Yeah.
So I was trying to like set it all up so it was right next to me so I could grab the iPod if I had to leave the room at all.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want to, I couldn't trust Monique to look after it. If I had to go to the toilet, I was like, I'm just going to stop the music for a second whilst I go off. Like, she was like, otherwise distracted. I was like, would you mind giving some of your attention just to make sure someone doesn't talk with this? Because it was too much, you know, and if you're doing it on your phone. So I'd say one practical thing would be, Then I used an old iPod. That way I didn't stress about it. So rather than putting it on your phone and thinking, oh, I've got it on my phone, and then using that as your thing, get an old iPod or something, and then you just don't care if it gets lost or stolen. It's not going to get stolen.
That's a very good tip.
You know, there's £1,000 in the corner there.
Yeah.
You're not just going to be like out of your consciousness. Like the whole time you're stressing about the birth, but you're also thinking, shit, there's a grand just sitting on the side there.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got to grab my phone if things go wrong. So you don't need that extra little 5% of brain power focused on that.
We've got that Bluetooth speaker, so I'm just going to keep the phone firmly in the pocket, mate.
I did think suddenly
it's a good thing I hadn't even considered.
But still having a phone that if you want to do messages or whatever.
Yeah.
Just to have something separate or whatever.
Kill the music.
What was the other thing that we did? The Poonet. They told you about the Poonet.
Well, we've heard Esther Manito talk to us about the sieve that her husband was given. And she said he didn't know what to do. He sort of just sat in the corner with it, scared.
But that's because she was like, don't fucking talk. I don't need your help.
I mean, there also is that thing as a birth partner I've got to understand from talking to people is that you also sort of, you've got to be wary of at any point if you're being overbearing or anything like that, you've got to just step back and from what talking to Esther Manito was very much of the mind of, she almost just wanted to do it. She got into this headspace where she was like, I'm going to do this. I don't need anyone else. Literally, not even her partner. She was almost just like, you shut up and sit there. Just let me do this. I need to go into this zone.
Yes.
So I do think there is that thing of checking. I imagine some people might, you know, if they were too overbearing, would have to slightly check their ego a bit and go, right,
yeah, I mean,
this ain't about me.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, that's and that actually goes to wider thing of having a child. Is I was fully resolved from the pregnancy, from, you know, that you are not number one anymore.
Yeah.
And that can be hard for someone's ego. A man, you know, this is your partner, the love of your life, and you have your child, and suddenly, but I just was like, you just got to learn to share. And that comes even before the baby. And it certainly comes during the first few months onwards from that. But the point is, you just got to be willing to step back. And I know that some people react badly to that. But suddenly they're not number one. And that you have to just, like, for me, it was like, I was secure in our love that it didn't diminish. It was just the addition of love, but her priorities have to be towards the nurturing of the child or the set, you know, and all that stuff. So the point is, you've got to leave your ego at the door as a man.
It's also kind of like the first step of family. Like, you hear that often when you have a second child, that the first child has to understand now there's a new, someone coming along and things are going to be different. But obviously the step before that is for the partners
or the
parents to go, okay, now we're going to, it's not just about you and me. And that's, that has to be checked.
But I've just started reading a book that Hannah read called Three in a Bed, which is about co-sleeping.
Oh, yeah.
And it just talks about the psychology of that to some partners, almost that is just it. Some partners who already might be a little bit sort of, not put out might be the wrong way of saying it, but, like, you know, might feel a little bit excluded.
Suddenly
you get into bed and your partner is sort of turned the other way with the baby there and you're just on the edge of the bed, and I think that to those people they can have a real issue with that if you've
but if you
see it as, like you say, it's, you know, you're comfortable and you're like, you accept it. Cause you're like, this is, A, it's temporary. That's even, if you want to put it in the most simple terms, but also it's necessary is the word, I think, as well.
Absolutely. So, and I think as long as you know that that's what's going on and you recognize it if those feelings come up in yourself, then you're kind of already, you're dealing with, that's massively helpful towards dealing with it. But I think some people, they don't understand why they feel rejected or angry or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's because they're not aware of necessarily the psychology of what's going on for them. But yeah. Like, I was sort of fully like, yeah, I'm going to be, I mean, I have low self-esteem anyway, so I was like, I was fully prepared to go into second place. Like, I'm, this is my natural state. I don't want to be out in the front taking the lead of love.
Yeah.
I'm totally happy to take a step back, and I'm like, I'll take whatever scraps I can get. I'm grateful for anything. So that was easy to handle. But the Poonet, we were told to bring our own Poonet. Maybe things have changed. Maybe now you get given a Poonet.
But we haven't been talked to about really from Esther's.
Yeah, the Poonet has yet to be raised.
Bring a Poonet if they don't. But this goes for a much larger thing. And that episode was what was really about was our desperate need to get this water birth that just we could not get. We never, in five children, we never got the water birth.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We got in the, for child four, I think we got in the bath for about 10 minutes. And that was it. And then, but the rest of them, we couldn't get this water birth. And it was like the holy, we kind of almost like having more kids just to see how far push the system to get this water birth. That we were, I just wanted finally to get it, but we never managed to. The first one, they built this birth center and they were like, yeah, it's got its pool. And we were like, and then the birth center just didn't open. It was all built in time. They just didn't have the staffing. And we were like gutted that we couldn't get. But there was in the main ward, there was one suite that had a birth pool, and they were like, oh, it's busy. As soon as we got there, we were like, can we go into this one that's got the birth pool? We want to have a water birth. And they're like, oh, we'll check. And they were like, no, it's busy. And I checked later and it wasn't busy.
Oh.
So I knew because if they do a water birth, someone has to be present all the time,
the midwife.
Whereas otherwise they can sort of walk in and out and stuff. So they don't really want you to have a water birth in the main thing, because it's a pain in the ass for them and we're human beings. So that was like frustrating, and I was trying to fight the system to get but so I never got to use sieve. So we kept on just using the sieve as a sieve for years. Our poo sieve just became our normal sieve.
Kitchen sieve, yeah.
the kitchen sieve. And then every time we'd be pregnant, we'd like get the poos, take the poos, you know, the normal sieve with us. Suddenly it became the normal sieve with it. But because we never got to use it as the poo sieve, we're just using it as our thing. So
it's just had more trips out of the house than most.
Yeah, exactly. There's a happy ending. So every time I look at the poo sieve, I'm like, there it is. That presents us. Oh. We never had our water birth.
If that sieve knew what it was being taken to do for, though, the poor thing. Every time it just gets taken on this day trip and it doesn't know what could have happened.
Yeah, I know how lucky it was. but a word of poo, let's get the poo thing out of the way. Again, if you've watched any books or read any books or watched anything, or you'll know that there's a bit of poo involved. If you're pushing and there's 12 hours of you know, there's going to be some poo at some point. Yes. I mean, Jesus, let's just get over that. It's going to be poo. The main issue is not going to be
from me.
A guy going, oh, there's some poo. It's going to be, you know, no one wants to poo in public.
Again,
There's more, but I mean, you are otherwise distracted to the utter shame of your public poo-poo.
Yeah.
But as a man, again, I was just like, just eat it, grab it, get rid of it.
Yeah.
You know, there's some gross stuff going on out there in the world. And you just, you know, you lock it in that dark place. Revisit it again. The same with like the birth, you know, you see the birth, it's beautiful, and you're like, how am I ever going to have a sexual thing? You know, guys, we're not complicated. It takes about, you know, the first erection you get, suddenly you'll forget what you saw.
Yeah.
How will I ever be attracted to the, after seeing the poo and the what? Oh, I've got an erection. Suddenly, guess what? I can manage. I can just about manage to get over it on this stuff. So you do worry about these things. Oh, but, you know, we, as a species, we've somehow survived this stuff. So, I think as a birth partner, I was just in on it. I think the reason, you got a TENS machine, not that they're necessary 100%.
We haven't bought it yet.
No.
We're going to.
It's on the list to buy.
Yeah. They're quite cheap, you know.
You can buy it, you can rent it, yeah?
Oh. Okay. There's
a company called Ten something, and we rented it every time. They send it. It's got new batteries. It's got everything. Explains it. And they're quite good. They do. I think they do work up to a point in terms of you increase the voltage and that kind of can help. But really, what they're great is for a guy. They're fantastic because it's a gadget that allows you to like feel like you're doing. Look, I'm reading the instructions and I'm putting the pads in the right place and I'm operating this little gizmo. So in a way, it's sort of good for sort of psychological distraction.
So did you, when with the Tens machine, you were actually holding
I was holding it and sort of going, and timing it to contraction and stuff. The other thing is like I was holding, because there's the gas and air thing, which is sort of awkward because it comes out the wall. And again, Minnie was at weird angles. So it's just being able to put it on the side, pick it up, hand it to her. Basically, your job is just, you're like the pit stop. Your job is to just do everything in the background so that your partner can just focus 100% on their body, their breathing, and their state of mind and all that stuff. And you just have to do all the kind of
The admin around it, basically.
Well, admin, you're an admin.
Yeah. And, you're basically what's the word, like... You know, like an entourage of a massive celebrity. You're like the one who just makes sure they don't ever have to get their own drink and stuff.
And you're not getting the glory. There's no glory in it as much as but you
unless you're the best.
Yeah, unless Rose tells you that. And then you put it in a sitcom on Radio 4 to say everyone else knows.
there's no glory. There's self, you get the satisfaction of knowing you did what you did. But you're just doing all of these things.
Hello, I'm Chris England, and I'm here to tell you about the Fun Factory podcast, available now on Great Big Owl. Each time, I will be reading a couple of chapters of my novel, The Fun Factory, a historical comedy about the history of comedy. So it will kind of be like a free audiobook, which you can listen to at the gym, or jogging, or at your desk while pretending to do your job, or on the train without the embarrassment of people seeing you actually reading a book like some kind of swot.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And I guess the other thing I wanted to say was the breathing and stuff. The NCT have done it, and this whole like counting to 10 and being that. I guess it depends on what kind of person you are. Like you was mentioning that person, they didn't want that person involved. But for many, we doing the counting together. It was like that was the real stuff. Was like really you're doing all this out of water stuff and whatever. But the counting. And the soothing and the encouragement, that is like the real, that's where you're like, you're in on it. And I remember, and then when things get a bit towards the end and there's been might be a little complication here or there, nothing that, escape, but like things just happen, whatever. The point is that you're just like, you're 100% locked in to your partner and being there to give them something to focus on that is like love and that they feel safe basically to make that, and so that's what I was really trying to do as much as possible. And, but like, there's no, and you're just, that's intense. That's like a shared moment.
Yeah.
You have forever. I don't know how, I think for women, I can't speak because obviously I'm not being, but it seemed to be that you do get, Monique definitely got into a state of mind, of focus, and I wonder how much she really remembers of it all, because, you know, just almost like she went to a different place, almost. But you have to be there to sort of keep everything grounded and be part of that, but be aware of the doctors and the midwives and all of that stuff. So that was where it was real. And then when the actual birth part, like the, you know, when baby's crowning and all that stuff, it's like you're there to help. I think I did help towards that fight, literally that final push in terms of the you know, you're doing amazing, you're doing, you know, and then just like listening to what the midwife is saying or the doctor and sort of being the in-between person between you're sort of taking those instructions and then feeding them to your partner. And I just remember when things get really real, I just remember sort of being literally right in there next to Monique, squeezing each other's hands, taking that information that was coming to me and sort of pushing. And I had to get a bit, there's no moment for shyness at that point. You've got to be how you look or what's going on. It's just, you got to be like just encouraging. And then I'm talking about that final 5-10 minutes. Or
Like, I suppose at that point as well, even the tone is going to be from the midwives and doctors, whatever the situation is, their tone is going to be sort of supportive, but it's also more medical than it will be supportive. Yeah. So you've got to almost, try and then just almost
translate.
Not just translate, but obviously you'd have heard it, but you're then saying it again in a much more humanistic term.
Yes, exactly. Like, you're nearly there. You're doing amazing. You're doing fantastic. You're so close. You're doing amazing. You're the biggest push. And you're like, you're just in on it. Like, it's like in a different place yourself almost. But that I felt was, as opposed to some guy standing behind everybody going, what's going on? And whatever. And sort of being a pain in the ass in their own right. It was just fully focused on, I was like right in Monique's face, right there to give her something to focus on, to give her that comfort, hopefully and whatever. And I felt like that. And it was an amazing thing for me selfishly just to be there in on it. I do think that it was like we were part of it together,
I suppose it would be that feeling of as well, once the baby's out, if you've been right up there going in them final moments, I suppose there'd be a part of you that has that moment of relief much more significantly than if you're on the other side of the room just waiting for them to tell you your baby's arrived.
Yeah, absolutely. You feel part of that process. Of course, your partner's doing the heavy lifting and all
Of course.
But you're part of it. You are part of it. And,
You get an assist for it.
Absolutely. And I always joke about men, how it's tougher for men, the birth and whatever. because Monique's not there, psychologically she's not there, so I'm the one who has to bear the full brunt of the... I mean, and I sort of hesitate to talk about it front of hand, but I will. There's a lot of fear with a birth, and that's normal. And for me, as a sort of stressy Jewy type person, I should point out to people I am a Jew.
Yeah,
not just that type of person.
Jewy type, I'm also a Jew. There's a lot of stress in that lead up and all this kind of. And if you watch things, and you're just getting freaked. You have to hold back on that, and it get that moment of the birth, the labor, and then those sort of 10-20 minutes of the final bit are the most intense moments of my life. And they are so real, and that's sort of, I think, where you kind of show what you're about in some way. Are you going to buckle under that pressure and that fear and that whatever, or are you going to just get in on it? And the relief at the end is just like, oh my God, the baby's here, the baby's healthy, everyone's safe. It's like, oh, but God, that the pressure building up through the 9 months. It comes with it. This is what I really wanted to say was, what's funny about it all is that you sort of get past that moment and the baby's here and the baby's safe and your partner's safe and everything's cool. And then you realize all of that 9 months just is meaningless. It's like all of that stress is like, oh, now I've got this creature, this being, and you think you've got somewhere and really you've got to the start. And that's the one I would have wished that they'd done in the NCT was just go, of course, we're here to talk about the birth and we're here to prepare you as much as possible. But and even though they talked about breastfeeding, but they didn't talk about this sort of almost psychological thing of like you think that you get the birth done and suddenly that's something. Well, it isn't. Like, that's out of the way. And then the real journey starts.
And I think weirdly feel like that was quite a big topic in the NCT we did. I feel like that was like quite stressed.
Yeah, I think that was my question as well at the start of it, going, is there any particular things you want to talk about today? And mine was, what do you do once you've got the baby? Like, what happens once that moment when you just have the baby there?
Yeah.
Now what?
And actually, we did a whole, the second day of the NCT, we did it over a weekend on Zoom. And yeah, the second day was almost exclusively about once the baby's here. And it was actually really good. I found it really, you know, I suppose because I've spent a lot of the pregnancy reading child psychology books and things, just like that's sort of a topic I'm interested in. So I think I've spent a lot of time, and because Hannah's had quite a breezy pregnancy, there's not been any issues, luckily. Like yesterday, Hannah was feeling a bit sick for the first time, almost since very early on, and she didn't really particularly have any sickness early on. And you know, had to have a few blood tests for this platelets thing that's currently just showing up as being a bit low. You know, on the whole, Hannah's pregnancy has been she's made it look very easy. So I've spent the whole pregnancy not in any way really stressing about the birth, because she's given any indication that it's going to be difficult. And just from doing this, we feel like we're constantly hearing such a varied list of stories of births that I've not got one in my head that I think Hannah will have.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just open to whatever happens. That actually, it's only in the last, I'd say, few days, like that near to the birth, that I've started to suddenly have almost little moments in the day where I suddenly can envision the actual birth itself. And I think, like you were saying, that's when I can feel a little bit of stress and a little bit of something I've not felt the whole pregnancy.
Like pre-gig nerves or whatever.
But I've been lucky, because I think a lot of people do spend a lot of the pregnancy thinking that, but I've been very lucky in that it's just very, very recent. It's even really come into a reality.
Yeah. And that's great that you guys have, that your NCT did talk about that stuff. I guess they didn't seem to at ours, but and then maybe it was just also because I got such a state about the birth itself that I hadn't allowed myself to psychologically prepare. Not that it was like a massive, it turns out wasn't that big a transition at all, but it just in terms of but it was like, oh, like you feel like you've got somewhere, and then that you feel like that's the destination, and that is
I texted someone today and just said something about that, you know, because I'm 36 weeks at the moment and saying getting very close to the end, and then I was like / beginning,
because
not, is it, like it's going to be the end of the pregnancy, but that it's the start of life.
Well, I suppose, you know, because we've talked for a fair bit already, but that won't keep you too long, but it would be good to just probably go into that quickly. Like, obviously, once the baby arrives, obviously you were, you know, you nailed the birth part of it
every five times.
What once the baby came along, how was your transition into being like the support, you know, the main support?
There was stress. We had some issues with breastfeeding, and maybe I don't think they do it as much, but the NCT pushed the breastfeeding maybe a little bit too much, like scared us a little bit that if the baby wasn't breastfed or had a bottle, that their life would be almost over and all that sort of stuff. So we had some issues with breastfeeding. And actually, Maudie, when we got home from the hospital, like we went into labor with, this is our eldest, about 12 o'clock at night. And actually, Monique, like the she had like a Braxton Hicks or something in the morning, or the plug went or something like that. So he thought, oh, it's now in the next week or so. And I hadn't yet built the pram, built the cot and things like that. So weirdly enough, we were like, okay, well, let's get these things together that we had sort of got but hadn't really sorted out and everything. Yeah. So we got all that stuff done. And that took the whole day, and I was having some DIY issues with the cot and all the stuff. But got it done, absolutely shattered. We lay down about 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning. And then Monique's like, oh, my water's broke. And I was like, oh, no, this is my night. Because I was so tired that the idea that it was like, I can't, I've got nothing. Like, it was like a trick that I sort of was starting.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think I just went, but you just go to this other place. But getting home, Morty was born like 9:50 in the morning, that later that morning. So we waited at home for a few hours and then went in the middle of the night and stuff. But so we spent the day there, got home that night. We didn't want to spend the night. That's what I wanted to say. I want to talk about that. I want to talk about a second. But we got home in the evening, and then we went to sleep at sort of 9 o'clock or something. And Morty just slept all night. And we were like, oh my God, this is an absolute piece of piss. Like, everyone says they're waking up and da da da. But look at this. What we hadn't realized was that he was basically been starving and was just too tired to wake up. So when we woke up next morning and tried to latch it, was like, there's this weird thing where you need to breastfeed, but if they don't get it enough, then they start losing energy. So then from that point on, I was like, it was very stressful because it was like I was milking Monique like by hand to get this little cut that we could give him enough strength to get him to latch on. He wasn't latched on. So this sort of 3-day thing, we were like, it all became about trying to get him to breastfeed and to latch on properly. And it took, that was a stress that coincided with the postnatal depression, you know, like that, not the big thing, but the thing you get 3 days after where, you know, for a woman, you basically crash, you know, and that happened with all the, so that's something to expect, unfortunately.
And is that just obviously the birth and the initial aftermath is just almost so exhilarating. There's so much that once that all dies down, the adrenaline, everything goes. It's just, you're basically just totally out of gas, aren't you?
I think so, but I do think there are medical reasons for
and probably hormonal. Hormones totally.
The hormone shift. So that can be. And again, as a guy in that situation, you know, if you've looked into all this stuff and you've researched, you know what's coming anyway.
So
you just got to make sure that you're just aware of what's going on and maybe not point out too often, you know, no, this is totally.
This is just what happens.
I didn't do anything wrong in this case. It's, you're just, you know, you're feeling like this because I'm like, maybe just go, yeah, okay, it's my fault. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Maybe rather than my, so maybe I'm not so good when it comes to that stuff, but the after thing. But yeah, so but Morty did feed in the end, and then it was all fine. But it was like, are we going to go back into the hospital and all that? So that was incredibly stressful for a couple of days.
Did you work your way through that by yourselves, or did you contact people?
Well, you had the birth. They come around. The midwives come around. Like every day. So we did have a midwife come and then I think and check on us and help us with the latching and voice her concerns. And we were going to leave it like one more day. And then if he wasn't latching, we were going to have to go back to the hospital or do a bottle, which we didn't want to do the bottle because the NCT had like said, if they take the bottle, then they never latch on.
Which I think
is necessarily 100% true anyway.
No.
So it was just like, it was really super and combined with this depression-y thing. So it was just super, super stressful. Mm. There is some good practical advice, though. One is give yourself some time alone before accepting people into that first few days. I would say, you know, of course you want to show off the baby and you want to whatever, but I would just keep it to, like, core family. Maybe we invited some friends around too soon and we should have waited more like a week or two. Give yourself that time because that was a mistake, I think, having too many people too soon. You know, that baby's going to be there. You can show him or her off. There will be opportunities. And what's the other thing? I don't know you different part of London, but the hospital that we went to was great. the births were all great, like really good midwife stuff. But then you go up to the postnatal thing, and that was, I'm sorry to say, a bit rubbish.
Yeah,
and I want to say something a bit harsh here. It seems to me that they're, you know, you're like any career or job or anything, you're going to have good people at it and you're going to have bad people at it. And with midwives, it felt to me, I could be wrong, I don't want to insult any midwives there, but it seems to me that they tend to, there are some rubbish midwives and they might get put on certain shifts or in certain places in the hospital where they do the least harm, if that makes sense. So the antenatal stuff, you know, yes, we had some good and a lot of, and by the way, a lot of people go between those different departments. Yeah, but when we first arrived in the hospital, I thought, oh, we're going to go into a suite, we're going to have our suite. But you don't go in until you're 8 centimeters dilated. So we actually spent that first sort of 5 hours or so in on a ward where people were in that pre-state thing. And that was really stressful because you don't have, you know, you've got your curtains on either side. The midwives were frankly rubbish. I had to go and say, look, can we do another check? We were just left alone, basically.
Yeah.
And that was really stressful. And it was also hot and stuff, which is similar birth time for us. Everybody's birthday's on Sunday. So it was really hot. And you're cramped and you've got all your stuff and it's all in this little, not even a cubicle, in this sort of just... And we were just so desperate to get to our actual room. Once we got to the room... then it was great. Suddenly we had a new midwife who was like on it. We had space. I could set things up. We could get, you know, and then Monique could walk around. She could do the things she needed to do for the labor. But when we were in that little cubicle, you know, but they keep you in there until you are 8 centimeters dilated. So you have to be on it. So that felt a bit like, oh my God, please don't say this is going to be our midwife, because it was just rubbish. And then unfortunately, there were some rubbish people in the after part as well. Like with the first time, we actually end up staying in the birth, not birth suites, but in the, and then they were going to send someone around to check and they didn't. Like a doctor needs to come and check everything's okay. And finally we were like, we're just going to leave. And they were like, well, you have to sign a form. They want to keep you in there. And I understand why they do, but we were like, baby's healthy. And we've confirmed that just because of scheduling that you haven't managed to get a doctor to come and check on us doesn't mean that we should then wait another 24 hours just
for
So we're just going to leave. And when we did then go up to the postnatal ward, it was the same thing. You're back in these little, small amount of space. There's a lot of crying people, a lot of crying kids, babies, obviously. But so it was very hard for Monique to get sleep. It was very hard. And I understand why it's necessary, but in different countries you just go home straight away, and in some places like France you stay in there for like a week or two, but you get like a room, whereas in this particular you know, you're on a ward basically, and you're getting very little sleep, bad food, you're not taken care of as well as, you know, you've got one person running around and stuff. So that, for me, I would say if the baby's totally healthy and all of that stuff, that they want to do, you know, they want to do the ear check, they want to do all that stuff can wait and will be done anyway later again. But they just sort of wanted to sort of keep us in, and then they would be like, oh, well, we didn't manage to get this silly bit of paper, whatever it is, signed off, and made it seem like you had to stay and you don't have to stay. If the baby's healthy and you've been there, you know, maybe stay for a day or two. But there was like this poor mum who'd been in there for like 3 days because they hadn't sorted something out. And I just, you know, you can just leave like and get to your home, where if something's wrong at that point, go straight back in, of course. But you want to be back home in your safe environment, and that you can, where it's the three of you and you can focus on the you know, rather than the stress of the paperwork and someone needs to do that. Oh, but we've run out of people, so we can't do the test today, so you've got to wait in another 24 hours before sign you off and all that, and just make your own judgment call, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. Of course, they want to be safe and sorry, and of course, you want to be safe and sorry. But at the same time, there is genuinely nothing wrong, and it's just because of some bureaucratic stuff.
Yeah, it's a similar thing to like what we've tended to learn from talking to so many people about their birth stories. Mm. You know, in that thing of and some of the books Hannah's read and she's told me about it, like, you know, I think people don't realise you've got much more say in everything.
Yeah.
Like in the birth, in the run up to the birth, in changing midwives if you don't get on with a midwife. And absolutely, there's loads of things you can do. And obviously in the postnatal situation as well. Like, I think we have in this country and in a lot of Western, probably it's a civilised sort of country thing, isn't it, where we think, we just assume they obviously know everything and we know nothing. So
yeah,
we assume that there'd be there couldn't be a bad reason or sort of a negative reason why they're keeping us in. Where, like you say, it could be something as simple as an administrative error.
Which it is. It's because, oh, that person forgot to sign that thing before they left the flesh kit. Yeah. Well, now I've got to wait 24 hours again until... I mean, there are some really silly and stupid things that take
place. Yeah. I think when it comes to the health stuff, I think people are so scared to make their own
judgment call. Public schoolboy British type thing. Oh, I don't want to rock the boat. I felt like that. Oh, I've listened, like, exactly like you say, and maybe it's just a British thing or a Western thing. Oh, this is the expert and stuff. But we did have one, you know, we had all five births, they're all here and they're all safe. But one Monique was, her waters are gone and there was a bit of thing. So they were trying to, you know, they gave her this chemical, you know, this drip that would sort of induce the baby, basically. And the midwife who was running it, I could see was not following the doctor's instructions. And I could see was giving her too much. Like, I could see that she came and said, oh, just keep it at 0.2 or 0.1. And she was doing it. She was accelerating it. And because I'd seen this, you know, people want, they're on shifts or they've had a long day or they want to leave early or they don't, or they know there's got another birth they've got to deal with. So I know she was doing it. Like, even, and it's a painful thing as well because it's inducing, which is a, you know, so I knew it was, but she made her call outside of the doctor and I knew what she'd done. Yeah. And I was getting bit. I was like, I tried to put some gentle, like passive aggressive, like, oh, that's interesting. It's at 0.2, but the doc said 0.1. And I wish I'd been much more. And eventually I was just going to say, and she just didn't seem, you can see when someone's good at their job and when someone's on it and when someone is engaged, and she just wasn't. And I was very close to doing it. Unfortunately, she went off shift. The next person we had was just amazing and just like anal and just like absolutely 100% on it. And but that's one midwife out of six in that, but, you know, so I feel like they put their best, they know who's ever in charge of the midwife knows who's good at their stuff. Who you're going to get for the actual birth itself and not to get too stressy. So I'm saying if you're in the pre part of it and there's someone who's a bit rubbish and a few people, you know, like, these guys don't seem to care, they kind of don't, and they're kind of just, maybe they're just local, you know, they've come in to make up the numbers or whatever it is, and they're not, and it, but that's not who you're necessarily going to get. And if you are in a final situation and someone isn't meeting your needs, then you just have to get over the silly British-y lightness and just say, look, I've got to be honest with you, I'm not feeling that confident here. I'm not feeling great. And just be willing to step in yourself. And because, you know, this is the most important few moments in some way. And kind of feel that you just want to be comfortable and not be being angry that someone's doing stuff and whatever. But I didn't follow that advice myself because I wasn't brave enough. So that feels like a big, what was the other, I want to say one more thing, top tip, are you taking a birth ball in?
I packed the birth bag the other day, but we haven't taken, the ball is still sitting here.
Okay, well,
blown up.
I think it's good.
Yeah,
I mean, I think Monique really enjoyed it. Some of them do have them in it anyway if you're in a birth suite. But she definitely got a lot of use out of it. The only thing I'm going to say is don't blow it up until you're in the final room.
I blew
it up in the first phase and it was really hard. And then we moved and you can't fit it through the doors. So I had to deflate it. And then I had to push it up again. I was like, I was shattered.
Okay, cool. It's a good tip. Yeah, because I had not really thought about bringing that yet. No. Like, I suppose it's good to add to the list.
I mean, it might have it there. A lot of them do. Is it, are you going for a birth suite? Or do you know if it's, does the place have birth suites? Or is it?
They do.
Yeah, ideally that's our first choice. But, you know, a lot of the people we've spoken to and things we've heard is often you don't get to go in there because the rooms might be in use or whatever. So I'm aware that a hospital, like the labour ward, is likely or a possibility. So yeah. Having those things, like I'm sure they've got birth balls there, but whether they've got enough for enough people on an award is questionable, isn't it?
It's the staffing issue. We went in on the weekend and there are positives and negatives. And I've also talked about this in my stand-up about like the parking thing, and the weekend was great because it was this, like, free weekend parking, and that's another, you know, you're stressing about, I don't know if you're driving, whatever.
We're just working that out.
Yeah, we haven't decided yet what the...
Well, this is it, because you need the car seat to come home safely.
Yeah.
So for me, it was like the same thing. Do you just go in and get a cab or something, or do you take the car? But look, there are practical concerns, and you don't want to be in the berth thinking, oh my God, the meter's running out.
Yeah, totally.
And that, you know, oh, I'm going to get it. I know it seems like stupid, but it is the kind of stuff that you just don't need as part of your processing power.
So
having that kind of worked out, and for me, it was like, I got a whole like routine. I mean, like, I did a whole series about the whole birth thing, but that was one of the things, was like, do we park a little bit further? That means Monique has to walk further to the hospital.
Then
I don't have to worry about parking. And for me, that was worthwhile. to take,
right, cool. Is there any? No, normally, when we have guests, Hannah gets to ask me if I've got any questions for them. But as it's, I've led this one. Have you got any final questions for Josh?
I guess one thing for me was being there at five different births, and then when you bring new children home, when you've got children there, how different that process is.
I guess it's part of making them part of the process in the through the birth, through the pregnancy, that they are aware of it. And I think, like, with the first or second, that's obviously a big jump. The second to the third's a big jump. Then after that, it's like a free for all. And now they're like, are you guys going to have another kid? We want another baby. Whatever. We're like, no, absolutely not. You need to get over it. But I think it's just, that they're, I don't want to, again, this sounds probably a bit wanky, but it's about the love. There's an infinite amount of love, basically. So they don't, if you've done your job right as a parent, they don't feel that having a child is a threat to them.
Because,
you know, infinite plus infinite is still infinite.
Yeah.
Of course, time does change, and there is a thing that you have to share your time in a different way. But what the benefit you get from that is that they get that time with each other. So of course we have to be quite strong about, and I don't always succeed about this, is spending that one-on-one time with each child for both of us. But at the same time, they are always occupied by each other. So they lose out a little bit of focus from me, as you sort of have to spread the focus, but then they get so much more. So that's the payoff of having a large family or whatever. But but certainly with siblings, there was never this like fear of that Morty, who was the eldest, was going to sort of. I don't know why we never really considered it as an issue. We talked about it, but it was always like an exciting thing. It was never going to be
going
to replace you in any way. I think that the man or partner in the situation, I knew I was wary of that. So I had to step up my game with the eldest when the new baby came along, because job as the guy in that situation is basically to run interference.
Of
course that kid's going to be used to having constant access to their mum, but so you just have to sort of be there to give the money. I felt like I had to be there to sort of distract him, take him off, do things so Monique could have that kind of one-on-one bonding time for those first few months Artie, and that seemed to work. But again, you are going from sort of you're and as a man, you're in the pecking order, you are then going down another one.
Yeah.
And I can't tell you how low I am. But I guess it sort of does change. But you but it's great, and that's part of that's your role.
Yeah.
But I guess as well, like you said, with the engagement, if you've already been engaged and involved, then that's just shifting up rather than suddenly being like, oh, my God, I have to look after this one. She's got the other one. It's like it's just, you know, massaging that a bit and changing that relationship.
Absolutely. I mean, as a parent or whatever, advice in terms of like the parenting side of it, it's just, and this doesn't come from me as much as Monique, who you've met obviously and knows, she's an incredibly nurturing person, and I'm very blessed to have her to compliment my cynical asshole tendencies. You know, good balance that works, I think. But even so, I'm in on it. It's just hugs and kisses. That's all. An infinite supply of hugs and kisses and boundaries and whatever. But that first year, all the time, it's just every opportunity for a hug and a kiss it just brings you together. So that when you do have to really start setting the boundaries, they know that it's not coming from a place, you know, that the love is still there.
They feel
that's never threatened. It's never like, oh, you're making me do this because of you don't love me. That's never a question.
They feel
that love so totally.
But
good to me.
Yes, good.
But you need those, but you do need the boundaries for sure.
That's
way down the line. But that first and I think with Morty, all we did was just stare at him for like 3 years. just the two, because I'm home as well, and you'll find it. You're just staring at them. Then they start moving. You're staring every moment, and I don't think a child has ever got. And I feel slightly sorry. You know, the other kids aren't going to get that level of intensity and stuff. But Morty is just so comfortable in his skin because you can just tell here's a guy, and he's not like a dick like some kids, you know, can be. It's different between being spoiled and being loved.
Definitely.
And he doesn't feel entitled. There's no like entitlement sense of like he's the center of the universe. There are boundaries, but he feels loved. And I think both Monique and I were very conscious of building that environment for our kids to make up for certain failings, certainly on my part.
Cool. Oh, that's excellent, man. That's really some really good tips, and it's just good to hear. It's good for me to hear a full sort of, you know, take on being
dad
a birth
check-in.
And but being a birth partner, that thing of I think I've sort of got a sense of what it takes, but it's good to know. It's good to hear it from a personal take on it rather than what books that say you should do. And obviously from the best on earth.
Well, you're welcome to step up. So generation, I'm happy to hand over my
If our midwife starts that sentence to me, I'm going to record it just so I've got evidence.
Or get your mum to say it in her Irish
accent. Yeah, I might. I'm going to mock it up. I'm going to get the midwife just to say it for a laugh. But cheers. Thanks so much, man.
Well, congratulations, both of you. It's a very exciting time, and it's going to be great. And I was just thinking your productivity is going to drop.
That's fine.
Say goodbye to your career.
That's fine. I've done what? I did 11 fringes in a row, so I'm allowed to have a couple of years in the.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, relaxing.
You think you'd be allowed. But then it becomes what your priority is as a human, and the constant acknowledgement of balance, but that becomes a wider philosophy of life. But I'm very aware that this time period of them being a small child is very finite and will disappear. And funnily enough, it's almost like having 5 children. It's only now that's allowed the early months to be fully embedded, because you're just going to forget it. You're going to forget the birth. You're going to forget these first year, that's just a natural part of it. But having gone through it 5 times now, I sort of have a sense of that stuff. I think it's almost a natural sort of biological thing, because it's hard. It's an amazing time, but it can be quite hard. And so it just wipes, your brain has to be wiped clear so you'll do it again.
Yeah.
Because you've got to think, God, this last year has been insane. When you're in it, you're like, not if you're not getting sleep, then you're going to get less sleep. But then after 2 years, you're suddenly like, well, that wasn't so bad. Like, well, yeah.
That was
right, wasn't it?
Right, cool, man. Well, thanks for talking to us.
Yes, thank you. Like,
absolutely. And,
I'll probably be tapping you up for some more tips within a few months.
Yeah, the next level. We'll see. Well, the proof's in the pudding. I almost feel like I shouldn't really talk about parenting until all the kids
are in prison.
Yeah, I've not murdered anybody. Then I like can be like, see, I told you.
Yeah.
So we'll see how it goes.
Cool. Thanks, man.
All right, guys. Well, good luck. I wouldn't say enjoy it, but I mean enjoy the journey. But definitely take it in, and it is. It's like the most intense, real moment of your life. You only get a handful of these things anyway, so I hope it's a lovely, easy thing experience for you.
It's coming. Coming.
All right, cheers.
All right, guys,
thanks.
Hello, I'm Justin.
And I'm Lucy.
And together we are the hosts of Plenty Questions.
It's a very straightforward general knowledge quiz.
We ask you 20 questions, one after the other, 5 second gap in between, and you shout the answers out.
And then you tweet us to let us know how you've got on.
See if you can get 20 out of 20. No one has so far, but that's because we haven't started doing it yet.
But we will. And there's also going to be some fiendish brain teasers. So join us for Plenty Questions.